practical web accessibility tips. Welcome to WebAx episode 32, testing for web accessibility. This is your host, Dennis.
And I'm Ross Johnson.
How you doing tonight, Ross?
Not too bad, just a late night of working. How about you?
Just trying to get stuff done. So tonight is actually, we're going to add into the agenda a little bit, and before we get into the main topic of testing for web accessibility, and we'll be going through some different things, but talking about a lot of tools, we have a couple news items and announcements to make.
So I guess the first one of note is IE7 is finally released, which is a bit of a relief because it is better, but it does add one more browser to test for at this point.
Right, because it takes care of a lot of the issues that people, you know, were aware of, and especially us developers. You know, with the standards compliance and CSS bugs and everything, but there still are, you know, it's still not, you know, fully standard compliant and everything. And I guess I found on the web that it took less than 24 hours to find some kind of security issue in IE7. But then they were saying it was connected actually through with Outlook or something, and I'm not sure exactly what the issue was, but it doesn't matter really to me. You know, if it's through Outlook, through Windows and IE7, I mean, come on, Microsoft, you know. It's like, maybe that's why you shouldn't be tying all those things together.
Yeah, it's creating a lot of potential for problems.
Yeah. But, I mean, the interface, you know, I like is got the newer look, you know, and it's kind of redone. And but I also, on the other side of the coin, you know, some novice users might not like it at first because they're not used to the format. You know, the Microsoft broke some conventions with the interface.
Yeah, actually, I talked to someone who just upgraded, and she was saying that she had to go in and kind of relearn everything. But it has some nice features. The open search, if that gets adopted, will be pretty cool, and the zoom ability is a nice idea.
But of course, you know, you still can't run multiple versions of it. But you said you're going to download that standalone IE7.
Ready? Somebody already
installed the previous version of it.
Yeah, I had one for the beta version, but somebody already came out with a standalone for the full version, and actually they've got standalone for everything from like IE4 on. So,
wow!
If you're really adamant about testing, then I'll find the link and we'll post it on the blog.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. You could do that.
Yeah, I don't know that you would want to, but
maybe
for curiosity.
Yeah, I just got the IE7 installed on my laptop, and I just left it at that, but I guess a couple other real good features of it that that Firefox has too, or is going to have, is the RSS features in IE7 are enhanced a lot, and it has anti-phishing features, so you don't get sucked in.
Good stuff.
Websites and stuff, yeah. But I guess Firefox is going to have that. Firefox 2, which is supposed to come out anytime now, is also going to have the anti-phishing features. Alright, well, enough about that. I guess we'll mention, because we didn't mention it before, but there is a blog post on the WebAx website about Target and the National Federation of the Blind lawsuit against them because their website was completely inaccessible. So it looks like they won. A federal judge sustained discrimination claims against Target.
So that's pretty major. I mean, it shows that, I mean, Target's a huge company, but it is, from a legal standpoint, something you do have to look at.
Yeah, it's a a good win and precedent, you know.
Yeah.
That term was thrown around in a couple articles, and it, well, it's cool. Because it's not just, you know, it's not just all about Section 508, you know, United States Federal, you know, there's a lot more to it than that. You know, I admit, like, I haven't talked about as much, you know, as I should have, maybe, with the ADA and this, the states have different civil rights acts that, that are cited, you know, and like this lawsuit, I'm reading, let's see, some kind of California Disabled Persons Act or Civil Rights Act, was cited in that case and stuff, so a lot more to it in the states than just Section 508.
Yeah, I mean, the more you can learn about it, the better.
That's right.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is I read this today over on the Monday by Noon blog, which you can find at mondaybynoon.com. The author there came up with a new idea for image replacement, and it's pretty clever and kind of the best that I've seen. It seems like most techniques thus far, either you're pushing text out of the frame with text indent, which breaks if people are browsing with CSS on but images off, or you have to have an extra span element, which is, you know, unnecessary code. And
right, I was doing that method for a while, just putting in the extra span and then pushing out, you know, text. Yeah,
that's the way I've done it for a long time, because it seemed like the best kind of compromise.
Can you give a quick summary of, like, what the technique is, just, like, briefly? Like,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
Theory of it.
What he does is he sets the actual background of the heading to be a real high-contrast color, like black, and then puts an image over it. But at the top of the image, he leaves a little bit of space that's the same color as the background of his whole page. And then the text, the actual text, fits in that little bit of space as well, which is the same color as the background also. So it's kind of masked by the image itself, if that makes sense. However, if images are turned off, the only thing that shows is the black background color. So he's kind of got like a gray background, and all his graphical headers have a little bit of extra gray up at top, and then the text is gray also. But if you turn images off, it's, you know, that light gray on black background, and it seems to work pretty well.
Interesting. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's worth a look.
Another method that I've seen lately that really is very, very simple is just actually, and I'm not sure, you know, how good this is for SEO, if it actually works or not, or for accessibility, but this is the deal. Some highly professional people that I know of, they, in say like an H1 tag, they just put the image like regular, you know, an IMG tag, they just stick that image like right in between the H1 tag and put in, you know, the alt attribute, and that's it.
Huh.
So you got your open H1, your image, and then your close H1, and with your alt text. That's all they do. And, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot of talk about this, but I have seen that in a couple, you know, credible websites. And apparently, you know, the argument there is, like, the text in the alt parameter, you know, would be treated as H1 text, if, you know, by search engines or by, you know, screen reader or by whatever.
So interesting.
This just isn't something else to throw out there, but if anybody else has any opinions about that, check out our blog and leave us a comment. And you could also call the phone number, too. I might as well mention that now. 206-203-0585, and give us your feedback. Should we go ahead?
Yeah, why don't we?
Are you going to say something else?
Well, the only thing that I've heard as far as alt text is that search engines will only really look at that if it's a link. So if it's it won't really necessarily treat that as an H1 tag in a search engine point of view unless the H1 is also a link. But for screen readers, I mean, it seems like that would work perfectly.
Yeah. Okay, well, one final announcement. I know this news and announcement segment won't be this long in the future, but their usability, International Usability Day is coming up in a few weeks, Tuesday, November 14th, and Michigan State University is having a big event that day. Every year they have a usability and accessibility conference, so Ross and I will be going to that.
So if anybody's there and
wants to
come up and say hi.
Yeah. If anybody else wants to check that out, you know, we'll put a link on the blog. And it's in East Lansing, Michigan, of course, the campus of Michigan State. All right, so let's get into our main topic, testing web accessibility. And we're going to go through a bunch of tools, automated tools and software that you can use to test. But before we start that, I wanted to talk about just some general things you want to think about and general methods you could do other than the automated tools. Because as everyone should know, you need to test much more than just with these automated tools. So first, I just wanted to say, you know, of course, you know, follow the guidelines as best you can for the WCAG, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, you know, and Web AIM, Accessify, and, you know, the pointers on this podcast, of course. And, you know, remember, of course, to follow any guidelines required by law, Section 508, possibly, the ADA, the American Disabilities Act, and a bunch of other countries have laws, the United Kingdom, the DDA, so on and so forth.
You also want to ensure that your multimedia and PDFs are accessible. I mean, really, best practice, any content on your page you want to make accessible, so that definitely includes PDAs, I think I meant PDFs. and that goes
right
for captioning, too, on video or audio. And use web standards, of course.
And what cannot be tested by most automated tools are color contrast, and there are a couple tools out there that can help out for that, but that's something to keep in mind, that that's a difficult one to test by automated software. And then the guideline of using simple language, that's a tough one too, so most likely a human's going to have to figure that one out. And then also, I'm not so sure about this one, but the tab order, yeah, I guess I'm sure about that. I've made an argument in the past, like, using tab index doesn't really have to be required, because if you're using standards and CSS, your layout should already be in the proper order, yada, yada, yada. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're using standards, you can move stuff around visually, that and it'll still tab correctly. So,
do you know of any automated tools that check tab order?
No, I've never heard of one. I mean, I think if you're going to check tab order, your best bet's just to tab through yourself.
Yeah. All right, well, that leads us into the different methods of testing besides using the tools. And one of them is, like you said, just go through your site, the site that you're reviewing, just go through it with the keyboard only. Just unplug your mouse and see if you can navigate it with the keyboard only. And, you know, if you have a screen reader available, then go through your site with a screen reader. Another really, really good thing to do if you have the resources is to have, or if you know someone, have an impaired user go through your site and, you know, have somebody that has issues, you know, getting to the content of sites to go through your site and see if he or she can do it. And always, as always, use headings appropriately. Okay, so let's start going through the tools. What's the first one, Ross?
This is Cynthia Says. So it returns long tables listed by checkpoint if a web page past that checkpoint or not. So this sounds like...
Yeah, that's my notes he's reading.
Yeah. So it sounds like...
When you run it, it gives you... It gives you back like a big table, and then it lists all the checkpoints, and it tells you if it's passed yes, no, or not applicable or something.
So basically, it looks at the WCAG guidelines or Section 508 and compares and makes sure that you pass whatever test it can check for.
Exactly. It looks at all the. It's a pretty long table, you know, and. It'll tell you if, you know, just scroll down through the table and look for any no's in there. So if you have any no's and that's bad, then you need to go and fix that. Any yeses are not applicable means either you've done it right or you've done, like, some serious standards and it doesn't even apply. yeah, it's pretty cool. It's You can access this tool, Cynthia says, a different ways. The website is contentquality.com. It's by Hi Software, H-I Software, and it's actually included in the Firefox Developer Bar. If you go to Tools and then Validate Section 508 or Validate WAI, I think it brings up the Cynthia report.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there we go.
I actually never noticed that before.
Yeah, cool. I just ran the webax.blogspot.com site off Blogger, and that looks pretty good.
Excellent.
Let's see. I do see one no on there. I'll have to look into that, but I'm sure they're wrong.
I think so. The site's so accessible that it can't even comprehend it.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so the next one, Aprompt. Do you want to go over that one?
Sure. Aprompt is it's a standalone application that you install on your computer. It's Windows only. I haven't used it extensively, but I've used it several years ago with a coworker. And, you know, it was pretty good. You know, of course, it also... you select, you know, different WCAG levels or Section 508, and it goes through and gives you a report. And you can also have it automatically repair your problems. I'm a hands-on guy, so I wouldn't really suggest that, at least not for myself. But it's a pretty neat tool, and you can find it at aprompt.ca. Meaning Canada, because it's brought to you by the Adaptive Technology Resource Center at the University of Toronto. All right, so next is Watchfire Web Exact.
Yeah, this is
AKA Bobby.
Yeah, this is what I usually go to, which is probably just a personal preference. I mean, all these tools are pretty good.
Notes look right to you. I mean, this is the tool, right, that used to be known as Bobby. I didn't see the Bobby icon on there when I went to it this time. I don't know if they've done away with that completely yet or what, but...
Yeah, I think they've just kind of taken it off their page, but I'm pretty sure that they used to use it when it was called Bobby.
Yeah. But you can find that at webexact.watchfire.com.
It's got a few cool other features like page download size and broken links, browser compatibility.
And it gives you like a metadata summary and stuff.
Yeah, so it kind of gives you a little bit more information that you can kind of go through and look at.
Yeah, that's good for the broken links.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, it just seems a lot of checkers these days don't confirm, you know, your outside links like that one does. So.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, of course, there's the Firefox Web Developer Toolbar that I mentioned a few minutes ago. So if you don't have that installed in your Firefox, go and install it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I couldn't live without it.
Yeah, every developer should definitely have it. It does tons of things. Besides, like I mentioned before, there's a tools drop-down And you could validate CSS, validate your HTML. And like I said, the validate section 508 in WAI, that goes to that Cynthia says. But it's got tons of other things you can do on it. You could resize your browser, you know, to like 800, 600 real easily, and toggle your JavaScript on and off. Toggle your images and alt tags. And what else does it do?
I mean, even beyond the accessibility kind of testing stuff, I mean, just for debugging, it's huge. You can outline divs and outline whatever div you're hovering over currently. And
you know what you could do in it that I didn't know until like a couple months ago? Under CSS, you know, you could, where you could turn it on and off and some other stuff, you could edit the CSS for like the current web page that you're on.
Oh, really?
Have you done that?
No, I'm definitely
going to try it. It's awesome to debug. You hit CSS and then edit CSS or Control Shift E, and then it brings up the all the CSS files on that page, and you could go in there and just change it. And it, like, of course, it doesn't change it on the server, it just changes it. You know, it's client side.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you could just mess with it, and then it's good for bug fixings.
So, wow. So, when you make changes, it does, like, real-time updates, that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'm surprised I never
heard
of that before. That's pretty big.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, we better move on.
Okay.
WebAIM, as most of you know, if you're a long-time listener, is one of my favorite accessibility websites, and our friend Jared Smith is... you know, important person there. They have a tool called Wave. And you can find that at wave.webaim.org. And it's another, you know, good accessibility checker. One thing cool about Wave is you could run it from four different methods. One way is just to submit, you know, your URL on the web page. You could also upload an HTML page. Or you can install, like, one of those little toolbar thing. What do you call it? A booklet? Install a Wave. It's like a, you know, a favorite in your browser. And when you click on it, it's like a JavaScript, and it runs the check.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a shortcut button. Yeah, bookmarklet, I guess is what they'd call it. And then the other thing is an actual Wave toolbar in the browser. But I don't think I've... I don't know if I installed that one. But basically, when you run that one, it's more of a visual thing. Of course, the visual icons, you know, have alt and title tags on them. But, you know, with different colors, it marks and different symbols and colors and title tags. It marks, you know, all the... most of the elements on your page, and if you know, if they're real good, and if they're just maybe a warning, and then a red marker means bad, that you got to fix that.
It would be an easy way to kind of evaluate a page.
Yeah, it's a good, easy, quick way to do it. And if you don't see any red then, or yellows, then go on your way. But I usually find just a couple yellows on my pages. Usually, it's just like maybe a small JavaScript snippet. You know, and they're just giving you a little warning to make sure, you know, that content is accessible if JavaScript is turned off, which it always is, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, right. All right. What's next on the list?
Links Viewer, which is a tool where you can go to and you type in a URL, and it'll display your page as if it's being looked at through links, which is a popular... text browser. Comes on Linux and Unix operating systems. So that way you can go through and take a look. If you know anybody's on a text browser, they can see, access all your content, and you know, it isn't hard to navigate, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it really is very interesting to see the results.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a real eye-opener.
Yeah. Yeah, and that'll kind of teach you a lot about the importance of tab index, and I find also the skip to content, skip to navigation type links are really helpful in these situations, because, I mean, you basically have the tab for everything, so if you can skip to navigation real quick, then it makes things easier.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, we could go on about that, but it's really cool. We'll put a link up there on the WebAx blog, because the URL string's too long to read. So, but you could also, besides just putting in the URL to test, you could also download and install the a links application to... does that mean the full links text browser?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I think it's just an open source thing. It's a pretty small program.
Yeah, I haven't downloaded that, but maybe I'll check that out. All right, the next thing I listed was Opera, the Opera web browser, which kind of, you know, has been pretty well known for the quote-unquote most accessible browser for a while, and it has a couple neat features. You could easily turn off images and screen sizing. Like, you could actually, you know, you could, well, I guess IE7, you said, has this, the screen magnification.
Yeah.
But it has something called user mode in Opera. I don't know if you've messed with this, Ross, but...
I think I turned it on once, but I haven't really had a chance to play with it, but it seems interesting.
It's pretty weird. It's cool. It's got, you put it in user mode, and you can select, like, all these different modes or whatever, but the one there is... It's kind of like the Lynx text browser. There's like a text browser emulator that you turn on there, too. So that's an alternative to using Lynx. But it's got some other, like, pretty strange things. So check it out. Okay. Firefox speech browser extension.
Yeah, these are pretty cool. I played with a few of them. Basically, it almost makes your... browser like a speech browser through a Firefox plugin.
So you install this Firefox extension or plugin, and then you basically have like a screen reader.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly how accurate it is to the popular screen reading software out there, but it's interesting to kind of hear it, just to get an idea if you're not very familiar with screen readers like myself. The two I found was, there's one called Foxy Voice, which hasn't been updated in a while, so I couldn't find one that will install on the latest release of Firefox. But from the descriptions, it sounds like it's attempting to do away with kind of the monotone voice, and I almost got the impression it's supposed to be like some woman talking to you, the web page, as opposed to... But that could be wrong. Maybe I'm reading into it.
That's cool.
The other one...
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
The other one... this one I actually did get to use, and it works quite well. It's called Firevox, and we'll have a link on the blog. But it installs real easy, and you just kind of restart your Firefox, and it'll start talking to you. And there's shortcuts to start reading a page, so I went through and listened to a few pages, like I listened to my own, and yeah, it'll read off just like it was a screen reader.
Cool. Yeah, I like the, I tried that out. I any screen reader, it takes a little bit of a learning curve, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I ran it couple times, and it was easy to install and seemed to work fine. I really like the Fangs emulator, and what that is it's not a screen reader, but what it does is, if you go to a web page and you hit the Fangs button, it pops open a window and it gives you a text rendering of what a screen reader would read. So basically, instead of it, you know, reading, like, out loud, audio, whatever, it just emits, you could read the text of what the reader would say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's probably a little more practical, just because what I noticed with Firefox is, I mean, to read a page would take 5 minutes, and you can't really adjust the speed. So if you're trying to go through and check the accessibility, it's much easier to read it and a little less embarrassing if people hear you.
And we'll put a link up to that on the blog also. That's sourceforge.net/projects/fangs, FANGS. That's pretty much it. We did want to mention a couple mobile web emulators. I did hear that Nokia emulator. I've used that a couple times in the past, Ross, at forum.nokia.com.
Yeah, I've used that too. It seems to work pretty well.
And you found a couple other ones?
Yeah, there's one at openwave.com. I guess they have like a phone emulator, and I haven't tried that, but apparently that's really popular. And Microsoft released a emulator for their Pocket PC mobile devices. So if you think, you know, you might have mobile users, it might be worth, you know, just loading it up and checking it out just to make sure it's at least navigatable.
Yeah, that's cool. Excellent. I'm glad you found that. Okay. Well, that's it then for WebAx Podcast number 32. The WebAx blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com. webaxe.blogspot.com. Email WebAx at webaxe@gmail.com. webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAx is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. www.checkengineusa.com.